Oh, it is horrendous out. Most horrendous. Treacherous and horrendous. A dastardly, diabolical mix of snow and rain. The trees are burdened with grass. The road is like a gnarled and wooden surface, full of pits and pitches and rolls and cracks. It's a road that Mesopotamians would be proud of. Lord, what is this? You might guess now that I am getting my gloves from the Department of Gloves. Not see anything in this voiture. Where are my gloves? What is all this business in my car? My car is full. Trash bags and no gloves. Has your car ever been full of trash bags and no gloves? On no account that you can recall. I don't remember going out with all the trash bags and then coming back with the gloves and hiding them. It's a role reversal. Listen to this river. I'm walking with my sharp tack feet. This is footwear report. I'm wearing shoes with rubber underclingers with nails sticking out. Look at how floody this is. This is a dangerous, floody river. It's almost completely going over the road. It usually goes under the road, but it's bridging up over. I mentioned that the road had a Mesopotamian quality. Not many know this, but the Mesopotamians were the first to try their hands at a road. They had no idea what they were doing. All they really did was, for 30 or 40 feet, they'd move the rocks a bit to the side. So the idea came to them. Let's clear this off, this sort of flat stretch here. So it's not a very good road. My long way around. Back when I was younger, you would hear comments, "Was this a Mesopotamian road?" Jokes like that. No one makes those jokes anymore, but the Mesopotamians. We would laugh. Last time I heard someone mention Mesopotamian road, I was so shocked I hadn't heard the reference in so long. And I looked, there's a man exactly my own age, and I thought, I wonder, is this a reference very specific to my age? That's it. I almost went up to him to ask him his birthday. He was exactly mine. A word, a joke, a reference, just for us. March 12th, 79 years ago. just for us. Us Pisces from nearly octogenarian years ago. Can't really say that, can you? You can say someone's an octogenarian, but you can't say, oh, it was octogenarian years ago that I was born. Almost. What a sloppy slop this is. Slippery, slickery slop. The mouse went up the clock. And all these trees are so down-bothered. And you know they're confused. Their little gerbil brains. They don't have gerbil brains. They have massive brains. They're the brains of the planet. Yet still, they can be startled, confused, befuddled by such tricks as this. Their arms thickly coated in this kind of glass. This is not rain, according to the old Websters. This is diamond bits from the Arctic polar vortex come to press us all, press us down, get the world flat, the Overlord said. And he sent us this, or she, although I imagine it's a he. In this case, I have no gloves. I could have brought a trash bag with me for warmth. It's not that cold out. It's cold enough, but I don't know if you can hear this. Far away, the maddest of mad rivers runs. Usually I come down here, can't hear that river at all. That sounds like a stampede of snakes. What was I talking about? Now I should mention that I don't just come a-walking. Oh, now thick puddles. Oh, that feels very poorly on the feet. Is it all like this now? So I come walking every night a little before bed, anyway. And sometimes I think to myself, oh, get the thing. Why don't you go get the thing? The thing, being the thing in my hand that records this. I usually forget. And then sometimes I go out and I'm talking to my hand. And I get home and I think, oh, that was a good one. And then I look at my hand, and I am dismayed. O hand, thinketh I, why be you just a hand? I'm walking in 3 inches of water, for the record, the record books. We often say for the record, and it's never recorded. There's no record. Terrible, terrible business. But now, I enjoy it, of course. I love villainy, the villainy of weather. The worse it is, the more I'm in it. My frozen fingers folded, Charlton Heston style. I've been reading Jane Eyre. Every decade or so I read a Jane Austen, Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice, one of them, and then I read Jane Eyre. I don't know why. They remind me of each other. It's a particular kind of romance. The Jane Eyre romance is a darker one, true. Some things about Jane Eyre that always rattle me. Mr. Rochester, for example, has a pet name, will call Jane Janet. Janet, he'll say. And he means to, by that pet name, bring her more warmly to him. What are you doing, Janet? Standing there in the cold, all wet. But it's... it's not a nickname that we normally associate with Jane. We don't usually throw a T at the end of people with the Jane name. Jane's Jane. It's not short for Janet. Janet is Janet. And never the twain should meet, but they do in Jane Eyre. So I'm always bothered by that, and I always want to talk to Charlotte and say, Charlotte, I think let's just stick with Jane. So it's fine. We don't need to make it more petty. A river, this is. I also get bothered near the end of this spoiler. For those of you who are just about to set forth on Jane Eyre or have long planned on it, you better stop listening right away. Although I could just be talking to my hand, in which case you are safe. Safe. You're in safe hand, as there's nothing in it recording this. And the other thing is, I'm old enough that all I've got left is the centre of vision. I can see dead ahead, but the whole peripheral business is largely shot. So and my neck is stiff, and so when I hold the microphone, the recording fellow, it's not a space I actually can see, unless with some great effort I turn my head downward, and I don't like to do that. So it may be there, it may not be there. But I like that too. Because that is the tightrope of life that we walk. It may be there, it may not. When you get old enough, your body conspires, your eyes fail, your neck stiffens, and suddenly in that place, it's almost symbolic. But toward the end, after the whole thing is up, Rochester's wife, Bertha Mason, is revealed as a mad Creole woman in the attic. And Rochester's trying to convince Jane that he is in his rights marrying a second time, being a villainous bigamist. And now we know that Jane is very proper in some ways. She's guided by her own inner flame. She reminds me of Emily Dickinson in some way. She touches truth. She's found truth independent of the world. And this is something that Rochester is deeply drawn to, is her deep, perfect, uniqueness. It's an immaculate... she's an immaculate creation in some way. But I'm always bothered that Jane, or Janet, can't see through the trappings of the social register, that she must persist in insisting that any allegiance to him with this wife in tow, wherever she might be, at the little house away from them, or whether they go to France and hide, that this allegiance is not right, that it is not correct. And in this one place I feel she falters. She does not follow or perceive the higher truth. And in this place, Rochester, I feel, is correct. He's speaking from the place of absolutes and ideals. And she is on the side of society and following society's thoughts on the matter, that it would not be proper for her to espouse herself to Mr. Rochester, or even become his mistress, because he is already betrothed. I find that very tricky. I can't quite digest it. I've been dramatically at work, so she has to go off and they have to separate again. But in my sense of Jane, that is not my sense of Jane. For she is always the one to see beyond. I could see my hand here. Now, if you haven't read Jane Austen or Charlotte Bronte, I would say do so. Now, I've seen in recent films some kind of play off the notion that Jane Austen is a female writer. She writes books for women. That no man can get through Pride and Prejudice, whatever it is. That men prefer The Godfather and women Pride and Prejudice. But it's not the case at all. You give it 50 pages. You have to give most good books a run, a long run. You have to tolerate some kind of problem that you have with it, whatever it is. It's your problem, it's not the book's. You have to get used to it. And we're not used to getting used to things anymore. All the things we see and like these days are instantly used to-able. Instantly used to a bull. That could be a metric they use in popular music. I instantly am used to this Gangnam style. Therefore, ipso facto, Mesopotamia. That should be the name of this one, if I'm recording it at all. Ipso facto, Mesopotamia. There's only one fellow who gets that. It's exactly my age. March 12th, octogenarian years ago. Charlotte, if you're listening, for me, drop the tea.